Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, August 20th. I'm Ray Graff. The coin and stamp experts are back for another hour of calls from all of you collectors out there. Bob Scott and David Tripp join us this afternoon. So if you are enthusiastic about coins and or stamps, you want to get your call in early. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Somebody called in the comment line and said, I really like Box Top. No, it's Vox Pop. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Or you can call the number, 800-348-2551. Stamps, coins, your calls coming up right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back our stamp and coin experts. Joining us this afternoon, Bob Scott. He was curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, and head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He is currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. Also here today is David Tripp. He is the former director of Sotheby's Coin, Tapestry, and Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold, Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant and cartoonist. Our number to call is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551 is the number, or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number, if you don't know it by now, 800-348-2551. Bob Scott, David Tripp, welcome back.
Great to be here again. Glad to see your smiling face.
It is always a pleasure.
And nice to have you guys here. Now, we have discussed on this program at length the inverted Jenny, and I think we all knew her very well. I guess it set a record, the sale, recently.
There was one record. Right, Bob, you
1.53 or 1.58 million for just a single unused pristine copy that had been bought in the 1920s and put in a safety deposit box and basically kept in absolutely pristine condition. So a single copy for $1.5 million, which was then the record for a single US stamp.
And that lasted for how many months?
2 months.
That's amazing.
Earlier on this month, they sold an 1867 15-cent U.S. stamp for $1.6 million.
Wow.
So it just got taken by a nose.
That's amazing. Woodstock stamp is out?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. I guess the Bethel, New York will stay in the consciousness for a little while longer. It's a rather interesting
stamp.
For
those who are still conscious after Woodstock.
Why is it an interesting stamp?
It's very reminiscent of the original poster for the concert. So it's the Dove of Peace, but of course they've put in love, music, and forever. So that
marketing.
You do realize that it's a 55
forever is
cent
also
stamp.
All stamps now say forever.
Right.
So it's love, peace, forever, and it's still worth 50 cents forever.
Okay. Or in this case, 55.
55 cents,
yes,
I'm sorry.
It keeps going up.
And then,
do you realize how much the rate's gone up in the 10 years we've been here?
No.
No, it was in the 30s. It's up to the 50s now. It's just incredible.
The earliest I remember, I think, was an 8-cent stamp.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to show my age. My first one was 3 cents.
3 cents?
3 cents. Okay.
Which is the lowest it's ever been.
No, I mean, there was 1 cent at one point, wasn't there?
There's a 1 cent for a printed paper rate or a postcard
oh, okay.
rate, but the original rate was 5 cents or 10 cents, depending on whether
and
it
the three
was...
cent they held for years, though, didn't they?
Oh, the 3 cent, yes. I mean, it was the best deal in, the best deal in communication for years and years and years. But that was when the post office used to make money.
That's true. Yeah.
Sad days.
What's new in coins?
Coins? Nothing much. One of the cool things that sold recently. The week before the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon,
mm-hmm.
Was a gold medal that Neil Armstrong took with him to the moon. And after Neil Armstrong died a few years ago, it was left to his children,
yeah,
who have been in the process of selling his bits and pieces. The auction house reckoned it would bring $100,000. And when the dust settled, it had sold for $2 million.
Wow.
They picked a good anniversary to sell it.
They did. But it's kind of part and parcel of the idea that it's not so much what the metal is or what the coin is, because this is a really boring modern metal. Normally, if it didn't have the connection to Armstrong and certainly the moon, it's the sort of thing that if it was sent to me and it's 14 karat gold, so it's only 60% gold, you'd look at it and say, okay, it's basically worth scrap value.
Right.
So $700. But because of the connection, design's not very good, but because he had taken it with him and because it was him,
yeah,
the value went sky high. And these medals were made. They were a whole series of medals that were made for each of the expeditions. Mm. And the medals were bought by the crews, and the only people that were allowed to buy them were NASA astronauts.
Ah.
And so most of them were silver. They only made about three or five in gold for any of them. And it depends. And their values can be $2,000 or $3,000 a piece. But if it's Aldrin or Armstrong or Collins, you're suddenly looking at anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000 or $70,000 for the silver ones.
Didn't Collins design it?
Collins designed this particular one.
Now, you know, with weight being such an issue when going to moon, how are they allowed to bring these on?
This is something, thank you for asking this, because I have not found any information regarding that, but that is the first thing that goes through my head.
It is actually noted that the astronauts were allowed and there's a term for it, the astronaut's personal bag.
Yeah.
So they were allowed, they had an allowance of weight that they were allowed to carry things, and it was particular to them. You were talking about the Armstrong. Armstrong is always going to be the greatest, yeah, of the astronauts, because he hated the commercialization.
Yeah.
He kept his things. He wouldn't go. He stopped going to his barber because he found out his barber was selling his hair.
No way.
So he was.
Yeah, and it wasn't until he died. The family kept all of his belongings, and they've been part of a series of auctions that have so far brought, I think, $4 or $5 million.
So he would not probably be on board with the fact that his family is now selling off all his memorabilia.
I guess not. No. Mm. No. Whereas Aldrin has sort of made a...
Well, one could argue he has moved off to another celestial body, so...
All right.
Well, looking down on us with a jaundiced eye.
Let's take a call or two before the first break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Bob Scott and David Tripp here to talk stamps and coins. We go to Merle in Argyle. Merle, you're on.
Wait 1 second. I got some food in my mouth.
Oh, but. All right. Yeah. Well, yeah. We have all day. Yeah.
Chew it 32 times and swallow.
This has to do with stamps.
Stamps. Okay.
And I have an International Junior Postage Stamp album.
Yep.
That goes back to the early 1900s. Some of the stamps, 1884 to 1905.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's not a lot of them, but there are several that go back into that time frame.
Right, and they're mostly green and red stamps, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Some blue.
Yeah.
I'm looking.
And maybe a few brown ones.
Red with, it looks like Tolstoy, but I'm not sure who it is.
You might be dealing with some... This is a worldwide junior collection?
Yes.
Yeah.
I got them for several different countries, but I just thought the Russians one might be worthwhile because my grandfather worked in Russia in this time frame.
Okay, and this is from the 1920s?
I think the latest date I saw in here was like 1920. Oh, the copyright book is 1928.
Right. This is basically these. When they say a junior album, the junior albums basically just have the spaces for the stamps you could you could really expect to get as a schoolboy.
So not the rare ones.
So no, not rare ones. It's a pretty thing. It's a nice thing to have, but it probably doesn't have any value. And Russian stamps after 1921 took them about 4 years after the revolution to actually get stamps issued. Are actually incredibly common because so many people were collecting Russia beforehand. They'd been, and they overproduced.
Any other states that I might want to look at and say,
enjoy them for what they are. I don't think you'll find anything that's actually worth anything there.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, man. Thanks.
My pleasure.
Enjoy your lunch. And there you go. Bob has already rained on someone's parade. Let's take a break. 800-34-
the day is young.
I know. Plenty of calls to come. 800-348-2551 is the number. Stamps and coins today, back in a flash. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551 is the number. David Tripp is here. Bob Scott is here. They talk stamps and coins every so often on this program. And before we get back to the calls, this email came in from Josh. And Josh writes, I've attached two coins, pictures of coins.
Okay.
I attached two coins I found in Plainfield, Massachusetts. One is an Asian coin of some sort. Another is an 1800s half cent. I was wondering if you could give me any details you might have on either one or both. Are they worth anything? Date on the Asian coin? Anything would be helpful.
Okay. Well, first we'll go to the half cent because that's always low-hanging fruit. That's easy.
Okay.
1828 half cent. From the photographs, it looks like it was dug out of the ground, which is kind of cool because it shows you that these really were in circulation around here.
Mm-hmm.
I can't quite tell from the photograph. These exist in two varieties, one with 12 stars and one with 13 stars around the head of Liberty.
All right.
On the other hand, it doesn't make any difference in terms of value.
Okay. All right.
In the condition it's in, which is very worn and corroded, we're looking at $20 to $30.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. Fair enough.
The other coin is Chinese. It is called cash, which is where we get the terminology cash today. Exactly. Had to come from somewhere.
Right.
And these were struck back into antiquity, back into the Han Dynasty, if I'm not mistaken, which is about 200 BC to 200 AD.
Okay.
From the inscription on this one, I'd have to spend a little bit more time with it, but this appears to be late 19th century, pushing on into this century. These were the lowest denomination coins that the Chinese made, and they're round, but they've got a square hole through them, which is very, very
distinctive. Now, why did they do that?
It was for carrying them.
Oh.
And you find them often strung on ribbons.
Oh, interesting.
Small change, basically. Yeah. Again, because it's copper, it is corroded. It's not definitely not the calligraphy is definitely not the earlier style. So we would probably here be looking at about $10 to $15.
Fair enough.
In that region.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins on the program today. Marianne in New Windsor, you're next. Or not.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Marianne.
Yes, hi, I'm here.
Hi, you are here and you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about a stamp collection that I inherited from my grandfather, who worked for General Motors in Manhattan and had the lovely job of being kind of an international public relations person. So traveled all over the world, and he collected stamps from everywhere. And anyway, included in the collection, there must be like 400 to 500 stamps. There are some very early American stamps that he handed it down to my mother, who added to it. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious if it was worth getting appraised, and if so, where to get it appraised.
Really?
I don't want to mail it anywhere.
When were the dates? What were the dates that he worked? So approximately?
He worked from approximately 1920 through 1980.
Okay. And did he start collecting the stamps from the very beginning?
Yes, he did. And then the American ones go back to the 1800s.
Oh, okay. Collection's about 500 stamps. It's
correct.
It's obviously very difficult. Do you notice, having gone through them, that are the denominations really more than, say, for the most part, 1, 2, 3 cent stamps?
The American ones go back to, I don't remember, 2 or 3 cents, maybe.
Right. But nothing really higher than 3, 4 cents.
Nothing in the dollars.
Yes.
For the American or the international?
For the American.
I don't think there's any American that go into the dollars. I believe. Yeah, I don't think so.
You see, the thing is, stamps that once you get to 1920, and it's a key date, production levels on postage stamps hit stratospheric levels. Even the slightly scarce stamps were printed in issues of 10 million or more. When you get into the 19th century, with the higher value, the dollars are printed in tens, hundreds of thousands, and you know, even something that was printed a million, because of the fact that so many of them become destroyed, they actually get some rarity. We're going to put on the website address after the show. You can take a couple of digital images, if you like, send them along. I'll have a look at them and I'll let you know.
And then he'll give you the bad news soon after that, Marianne.
One
day I will give good news, I promise.
And one of the things to always remember, and this is to everybody, the smaller the denomination with stamps, and this is also coins, generally those are small change. They were generally made in bigger quantities.
Huge numbers.
Vast quantities.
Yeah.
And as a result, unless they're a spooky rarity for whatever reason or in absolutely pristine condition, 10 times out of 100, you're going to get something. 99 and 9/10 of the time, you're going to get something that's a really pretty modest value.
Okay. Mm. Well, good luck, Marianne. Okay. And
right.
I believe
the
link is right on our Vox Pop page. But if you guys want to give your email address now, go ahead.
It's Coin and Stamp Guys, CoinandStampGuys, all one word, at Berk.com. That's Coin and Stamp Guys. Okay.
Thanks, Marianne. We appreciate it. David Tripp is here. Bob Scott is here. Stamps and Coins on Vox Pop today. The number, 800-348-2551. Frank in Hyde Park. Hello, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You're on.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a book of A stamps, the letter A.
The letter A.
You have a book of A stamps?
What does that mean?
Yes.
What?
They're all from Austria, Australia, Aden.
No, these are United States stamps.
Right. They're A stamps or aid stamps?
A, the letter A.
The letter A.
A is an apple.
Oh.
So do you know anything about this?
No, not at all.
Nope.
Huh.
Ah.
Thematic American
what
stamps.
What do they look like?
They have an A on them.
I know what you're
talking
about.
A-E-I-O-U.
No, occasionally, and some people might actually remember this, when the post office changes a rate, they have to introduce transition stamps because the production
that
hasn't
don't have a number
met.
On it, don't have a value.
So they substitute in, they started off with A stamps.
Interesting. And I did not know this.
If you
Bob
actually,
almost didn't know this.
Well, Bob didn't actually remember, but that's because obviously too much damage has taken place over the years. But about 10 years ago, I think before they really started adopting the forever stamps, which of course mean it doesn't matter if the rate changes.
Right.
I think the last one was an F or a G stamp. You just got these and they just filled in the short-term gap when the
postage
rate
went up. So, but this would
have
been the first, obviously they're A stamps.
And how long ago
was
that?
Period.
I think they started introducing these 60s or
70s,
because the rates were just so low throughout that period.
Any value to these?
They are actually worth just whatever the new rate was.
But since they don't have a rate, they're only A's. What would you put them on? What would you put them
on?
What value?
You know, the next time somebody calls in and asks for a coin, I will delve into a book and find out the exact dates and what range it is.
Frank, we're going to have to look into this for you. Thanks for
Keep
the call.
Keep listening, and I will find out for you.
800-348-2551 is the number. Stamps and coins today, David Tripp and Bob Scott here. Sarah in Beckett is next. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, how are you today?
Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Sarah.
Call.
You
okay.
Bet.
So I understand I had sets of commemorative stamps that, or even a set like in, let's say, 1985, all the stamps were issued that year.
Yes.
And I understand that you could buy those sets for less than the face value of the stamps. These are things that my mother bought, and so I started using those stamps. Now I have 33-cent stamps and 32-cent stamps, all the commemorative sheets of them.
Yes.
Do those have any value beyond the face value?
They are worth their greatest amount if they are affixed to mail and used through the post.
Yep.
I'll
get a note from Bob, and it's got all these vintage stamps on them. It's very cool.
Well, it's true, because I buy postage. The truth is, I buy postage for 50 cents on the dollar.
Right.
And
okay.
You've got a certain advantage by the fact you've got 32, 33-cent stamps, so you only need 23 or 22 cents in extra postage to send a letter. I'm so cheap that I use 1 and 2 cent stamps, so I actually fill the whole envelope. And the amount of time it takes me to, I should just buy a stamp.
Is there enough space for an address?
Well, he uses 8x10 envelopes.
I use the larger envelopes, but you can actually put them on the back. It's okay.
Oh, that I did not know. Mm. But I have mailed, shipped boxes that it costs me $50 in postage.
Mm.
I have filled them up with $50 worth of stamps.
Oh. Absolutely.
As you should do.
Money.
Well, you and Bob ought to have a convention. That sounds like a great plan.
We absolutely should do.
Bob. Okay.
Well, Sarah, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is our number. Stamps and coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp. And we go to George in Sheffield. George, you're on. Oh, hey, George, you want to turn that radio down a little bit, sir? Oh, for Pete's sake, he's waiting. All right, Zach, the engineer, just pot him down for a second. He'll figure it out. There's a slight delay here with George from Sheffield, who's listening on the radio and not his phone.
Who's Sheffield?
Hello, George. Can you turn it down there, old boy?
Hello.
Sorry. Call back, George, and then this time don't have the radio on. Let's go to Bruce and Sprakers. Bruce, you're on.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hi. Hey, Bruce.
Good. It's a nice show you have on today. This is memorabilia, election memorabilia in the shape of a coin. I don't know if you would know anything about it or not.
Well, you can fire away, and if we duck, we duck.
1936. It's like copper or bronze.
So that's FDR.
Okay, yeah, and it says on the front Franklin Roosevelt and Garner.
Right.
Heads you win. It's got imprint of their heads on one side.
Yeah.
Tails you lose. It's got an imprint of an elephant on the other side.
Huh.
That's
great.
And it is the size of a penny, a nickel, a dime.
It's the size. It's an inch and a quarter in diameter.
Inch and a quarter. So about a size of a quarter, give or take.
Half dollar.
Okay. So it's you know, it is political memorabilia, which are fascinating.
Yeah.
Nance, of course, Nance Garner, who famously said that the vice presidency wasn't worth a bucket of warm spit.
Ah, that was the guy.
That was the guy. It's a great thing, and they were running for his second term. There is an entire market in these things, and it has been building over the years, particularly as we see with the continued election cycles over and over again. You can look these things up. There's a particular man that specializes in these things down in Washington called Presidential Collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
And you can look them up. There are sales that have these things. It sounds like the official inaugural medals and things like that have greater value, as do the buttons, you know, win with, you know, I like Ike and
Nixon now.
And Wilkie, exactly, things like that. And some of those things can bring into the thousands of dollars. This, on the other hand, from the sound of it, sounds more to be probably $50 to $70, somewhere in that range.
Oh. All right, Bruce, thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Stamps and coins today. And Chris in Stuyvesant. Chris.
Gentlemen, how are you? First-time caller, first-time listener.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you. And it's a good place that you're calling from, Stuyvesant. I used to live there.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah, right by Frank Serpico.
Okay. Ah, I know exactly where you are.
All right.
But don't let Frank know.
Yeah, well, yeah, right. I'm not saying anything in Paco. So, gentlemen, I travel down to Cuba quite often, and I go for the music and for the rum, but I usually come back with stamps and with some coins, and especially the bills, both post-revolution and pre-revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the stupid embargo, you know, you go on Amazon, you can't find, or eBay, I mean, there are no books, there's nothing to find the information. What can I don't want to bother you with specific, you know, values of certain things. How can I learn more about this? Or can you tell me, what should I be looking for when I'm down there? It's such a rich, and both pre-revolution and post-revolution, the history is just, it's so unknown, and it's so beautiful, and so much is told on the money and the stamp, and it's so beautiful. I want to learn more about it. What would you recommend?
Well, there are books for the coins in particular. Are books, Krauss Publications. We call it the telephone book, but it's basically the catalog of world coins, and it will give you a whole section on Cuba with a little background information. The embargo is, as you say, it's frustrating, and things don't appear. One of the most peculiar aspects of it, particularly with Cuba, is the fact that some of the early sort of circa 1905 coins that were actually made for Cuba are illegal to bring into this country.
Mm.
What makes that sort of peculiar is that they were made at the Philadelphia Mint.
Ha.
So they were made here, transshipped there for use, but because they've got Cuba on them, you can't bring them back into the country of manufacture. So my suggestion would be the Krauss Publications. And Bob, for stamps?
It's almost exactly the same thing, except that the stamps are all listed and... anywhere except in the United States, they price all the listings because obviously everybody else has been going in and out of Cuba while the embargo's been going on. And if you happen to be in Europe, you can go and get as many Cuban stamps as you want and nobody actually looks through your bags.
Good to know.
But the best Cuban stamps are the ones issued by the Bureau of Engraving and Printing.
And during Marti and things like that.
From the turn of the previous century.
Exactly.
So pre the revolution, Batista and before. Yeah,
right. Yeah, exactly.
All right, Chris, thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. The number, Bob Scott is here. David Tripp is here. And let's see, looks like Patricia. Patricia in Orange County, you're on.
Yes, hi, good afternoon.
Hi, Patricia.
I have a question. My husband passed away recently, and I found a collection of silver coins that I was not even aware he had. It's quite a large collection of coins.
Right.
He has many of them in those coin albums.
Okay.
But they're mostly the dimes and I think nickels. But there are many, many, I believe, silver dollars that are all loose.
Silver dollars,
all different dates.
Well, the first thing you want to do is not have them loose, because when they bang it against each other, they lose value.
Right.
Condition is everything. The trick. It sounds like sort of little blue or tan folders that the dimes.
I think they're blue.
Blue. Okay. The Whitman. Yeah. These were standard collector things, like the Bob's got the Scott. Things. Generally, these were things you culled. I mean, I had them. I started with them. You culled out of the change and you put them in and fill them in. It's going to depend on a half dozen rare dates. Generally, those are the missing holes in the collection. I know I had every missing date missing.
Yeah.
So the trick to do is really, I would go to the library. And you can get a book called the Guidebook to United States Coins, which will give you a list of basically all the scarcer dates. You can do it online just as easily, but for pennies, you're going to find 1909 SVDB and 1914D, and there are a whole series of them that are worth more.
Mm.
Condition will mean everything. With the silver dollars, are they from the late 19th century? Are they 20th century? Or are they from with Eisenhower and Susan B. Anthony?
They're just such a huge assortment. I haven't even begun to look at them.
Okay.
I don't even know how to sort them.
Well, the trick is, as always, sort them. Coins are very easy and logical to work out. Do it by date,
right.
Earliest first. With the silver dollars, if you look on the back of the coin, underneath
right.
the tail feathers of the eagle, you'll see a mm-hmm. tiny little letter. There will be either an S or a CC. S is for San Francisco, CC for Carson City, D rarely,
right.
which will be for Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Those will make a difference. So if you make a list with those things on them, and then again, use the same book and you can go to it, you'll get an idea. But if they are
right.
silver dollars, the Morgan design from 1878
I know whatever the cutoff date was.
1921. Those, you know. At a minimum, those are going to be worth at least $25 or $30 a piece, even if they're in dreadful condition. But
no, they're in very beautiful condition.
Okay, well, don't shine them. And if they really are,
no.
If you want to scan some of them or take some images and send them
yes.
to us, we'd be happy to give you just some guidance
okay.
in that regard.
All right, Patricia, we have to take a break
okay.
here. Once again, your email address, guys?
It's coinandstampguys, one word, at Burke, BERK.com.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Stamps, coins, today. We'll be back. And welcome back to the show. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Ray Graff with you. It's Stamps and Coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp. We got an email here from our buddy Rich, and Rich writes, "Hi, Ray, you're right." Not sure what this is.
Okay.
If I'm right, it's the first time today, and I'm not sure what I was right about. The question is, why don't I see any clad coins worn down to the brown interior surface? Even old worn ones still have the faux silver appearance.
Okay. The reason is that the outer cladding is a harder metal, and it doesn't wear through as much. And that's the bottom line. It's a harder metal as opposed to the softer metal in the middle. And whatever magic amalgams they put together are meant to prevent that. You used to see it on the early ones in the 60s. But the new ones, they've got it down to a science.
Our number, once again, is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Chuck in Hudson. Chuck, you're on.
How you doing?
Hey, Chuck.
I have American Lung Association season readings from 1982 of Santa Claus Faces.
Santa Claus Faces, American Lung Association stamps.
Bob, wake up.
Bob nodded off. Hang on.
American Lung Association, 1982.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, I'm going to look it up.
All right.
It's just
okay.
sort of a little bit
so we have
before
some
my
little
time.
Some music. Do you have some music?
Incidental music, right.
The thing is, I think it's actually a standard stamp rather than a semi-postal. A semi-postal being a stamp where part of the selling price is for the postage.
Oh, the
and
proceeds
then part
go
is
there.
A charity donation,
yeah. Yeah.
which is very big throughout
Much
Europe.
Much like the U.S. commemorative stamps. There's one for the moon and, you know, $20 goes to the Air and Space Museum.
Gotcha. Very much so.
All right, so this was 1982, I think Chuck said.
But I think this is regular.
Right.
And it's got a Christmas theme to it. Did you
the
say Christmas?
The season rings 1982.
All right. These
but
are not Christmas seals?
Christmas.
And it's Christmas? And it's got Santa Claus on it, or?
Santa Claus face.
Santa Claus's face. Face.
Santa Claus, so 82 Christmas.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, we got plenty
was
of time.
Well, it's got nothing to do with the Christmas stamps of 1982.
Okay.
Marvelous.
Well, I'll tell you what, Chuck. We'll do a coin question here, and we'll have Bob look this up, and then listen closely to your radio. He'll have an answer for you momentarily on
or
that.
Or he will be ejected from the studio.
Or we will be ejected.
All right. Oh, boy, that's another. All right. Well, we'll go to Lou in Albany. Lou, you're on.
Hi, wondering. I've got a piece of paper currency, a 10 or a 20 that I have had for quite a while.
A 10 or a 20?
A 10 or a 20, and it's blank on the backside.
Blank on the backside.
Okay, that can be a misprint. Sometimes they just didn't get inked the other side. Sometimes also they get abraded and people do things. That is how counterfeiters work. They get a $1 bill and then they they take the image off and then they reprint with a higher denomination. So the paper is right. In any event, in this case, it is a reasonably modest. It will be worth a multiple of the face value. And I would think probably if it's a 10, probably figure about $100-$150.
Wow.
And a 20 figure again, a couple $100.
Wow, that's very cool. Even if it was used in counterfeiting?
No. If it's used in counterfeiting, I'm sorry, you take it to the bank. They will take it, and the Secret Service will take it, and you will not get the return of the money.
But will Lou go to jail?
Absolutely.
Lou will go to jail?
Probably.
No. Well, we don't know. Is he the counterfeiter?
Lou, were you counterfeiting again?
Not this week.
Not this week. All right. Well, then you're safe for a week.
I did bring it to a bank a banker that I knew, and he said, no, this is a real bill. It's just misprinted.
Yeah, wow, exactly. That's cool. And misprints, the coolest ones are the multiple denominations. So you get a $3 bill or an $11 bill. One side's a 1 and the other side's a 10.
No.
And those bring really good money. Those bring good money. Those are fascinating.
Those things actually exist.
They do actually exist.
Be darned. Yeah. Well, yeah. Lou, that's an interesting call. Thank you very much. All right, Bob, what did we find out?
Okay, it's not an American stamp, which is obviously why it didn't do anything. It's going to be a privately produced stamp label for the American Lung Association, obviously for some sort of fundraising drive. It has nothing to do with the post office and has no real postal merit. Except that I'm sure you could stick them on envelopes. They look like with a proper stamp, and it spreads the word. I mean, it's little charitable devices. They tend to be overlooked by the post offices, right. But they don't actually help ferry the piece of mail in question.
Oh. All right. Well, thank you for looking that up. David in Albany. David, you're on.
Hello. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. So I wanted to just get a general idea if there's significant value to three Roman coins that I have. I acquired them because they were inside a discarded filing cabinet. I picked up a filing cabinet off the sidewalk about 40 years ago, and it had some coins in it, as it turned out.
Yeah.
And so I've got quite a bit of description. I honestly don't remember where all this description came from. It's definitely not mine.
Okay.
But I have paper, I have paper detailing what I have here. So quickly, I'll tell you, one of the coins, it says it is a coin of Constantius II.
All right. So we're 4th century AD, so that's going to be about 340-ish, thereabouts.
So you're saying, yes, that's right, 344 to 346 AD, it says, Mint of Alexandria.
Right, okay, fine. So it was made in Egypt, northern Egypt. Is it copper?
It appears to be copper,
okay,
yes.
So it's probably what we call an AE3 or an AE4, which is the diameter of the coin, basically,
all right.
Which is how those are figured. Those do come out of the ground in substantial numbers. Condition is good, bad, indifferent.
I wouldn't be a good judge of that. I'll say bad.
Bad. But it's identifiable. You can see all the lettering, and you can see the face of the emperor.
Somebody could at one time, and they wrote it all down.
Okay.
Honestly, with
all right.
My naked
okay.
eye,
well, yes.
I can't see
okay.
it.
Well, in that case, these do come out of the ground by the ton.
Mm-hmm.
And in really beat-up condition like that, quite candidly, you could buy one for a couple of bucks.
Hmm.
I mean, that's the wonderful thing about ancient coins is that they can be affordable. Give me quickly the other two.
Yes. Okay. So another one, it says it's got, this is much more legible.
Okay.
An anchor on one side, a lily on the other side, dates to Antiochus the king.
Okay. So it's Syrian.
Jerusalem 132 to 129 BC.
Oh, so that's a Yehud. That will be a small, it's called a pruta. It's a small denomination, small diameter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Judean coins, there's a very, very serious collector base for things like that. They do come out of the ground. One would have to look at it that carefully to determine.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them actually have the name of Jehovah on them, which there's a bump in value for something like that. But again, I would say something like that. You're probably looking at a minimum of $50 to $80, and if it's one of the scarcer varieties, it could be worth a few hundred or even a couple thousand.
Okay. Well, that looks like it might be worth.
Okay. Send
up
us.
On.
You can
and
send us an image.
One.
Yep.
Okay. This one, too, we have good visibility and good detail. It says it was from Agrippa the First.
Okay, so we're in the same
AD.
Okay.
And it has barley sheaves, three barley sheaves on one side.
Right.
And something that looks to me kind of like a stylized Christmas tree, actually, on the other side.
Okay. So we're basically, it's a sheaf of wheat. We are in the Judean area. So with this all Eastern Mediterranean, which makes sense also with the coin of Constantius, because that's northern Egypt. Mm. Again, this is going to be something that we'd have to see an image of, but it's probably, and you said it's fairly legible. So you're probably, yeah. you could be as much as $100.
Okay.
So if you send us some images, we've given you the information. Happy to have a look at them and give you a little bit more detail.
David, thanks for the call. We appreciate it very much. The interesting thing about this, the thing that you have mentioned many times before is that counterfeiting's been going on a long time. How do we know? How does this person know? Well, these are legitimate coins.
Well, they wouldn't. That's for the experts to figure out. I mean, and as you say, people have been coins, they're money. So people started making fakes the day the government started making the coins. For the most part, coins were struck. Basically, there were two dies that come together, pressure, and the metal moves into the die, which is intaglio design. The forgers, in order to make the process simpler and easier, would take casts, and then they would pour liquid metal in. Mm. So they have a different fabric to them. They look bubbly. The design and the detail is fuzzier, for lack of a better way of putting it. For experts, it's generally pretty easy with ancient forgeries to be able to tell the difference. There are more and more sophisticated forgeries now that are – and actually some ancient forgeries have money – have financial value of their own simply because they are historical items.
Same in my world. Yeah. Some of the great forgeries just fooled everybody. I have to just interject.
Yeah.
Our man with the A stamps
– yeah.
They date from 1978, and that was the A stamp. And I think that was when they moved to from 13 to 15 cents.
So it would be a value.
So your A cents, yes, are 15 cents.
15 cents, there we go.
And that's the value today.
That's the value today.
All right. James and Rhinebeck. James.
Hi, James.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking my call. I inherited a box of first aid covers that look to have been made as sort of souvenir items. They don't have addresses. They have sort of pictorial scenes on the envelopes.
Right. Are they related to the stamps?
Yes, relating to the stamps.
What's the earliest date?
Well, I can't say because there's a whole lot of them. They seem to be mostly from the 40s and 50s.
Right.
There's some that go up to, like, there's some moon landing stamps and that sort of thing.
Okay, so that's 69.
The 40s through the 60s.
Yeah. Right, so 40s and 60s. So, go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if they have any value, if it's worth my holding on to them, or if I wanted to sell them, if just as a whole lot, you know, what would be the best way to do that?
You're better off just sort of holding on to them and appreciating them. Otherwise, I'll say something that Ray probably won't appreciate.
Yeah, well, I can predict this one, James, I'll tell you.
Unfortunately, these were produced in enormous numbers for a very, very much larger collecting population. And the whole thing is people save them. So there are numerous different versions of the same thing. They are, unless you've got something that's really from the 1920s, and even then it has to be a high value from the 1920s, and then the price increases exponentially as you go backwards. But 1940s, there were so many school kids. FDR was the biggest collector on the planet. They are just too numerous to have any value and probably will never have any value.
I'm sorry,
Bob. Bob torpedoes another ship.
And there goes that show.
I don't feel bad. I didn't make them.
Yeah.
But I do value a lot of them.
Has there ever been a stamp caller that you made happy on this program?
Yes, I know one or two.
Yeah?
Yes, definitely.
Well, all right. Well, let's see here.
One or two after whatever decade.
Well, it's been
half.
10 years. I mean, even a blind squirrel gets a nut now and again.
Lorenzo in Newburgh, you're on.
Hello, hello, gentlemen.
Hi, Lorenzo.
Hello. Thank you for my call.
Sure.
You covered most of my inquiries with the woman to call with the coin collection. I was wondering about silver certificate bills.
Right.
If they may have any value. And I'm storing my coins in wrappers and plastic stackable containers also.
Right.
If that's, I don't have them in folders.
Okay, that's.
I have the Liberty quarters, Liberty silver dollars, a lot of silver Washington quarters, Liberty dimes, Buffalo nickels. I was wondering if you could reference the book that you mentioned. Again.
Okay, it's called A Guidebook to United States Coins by R.S. Yeoman, Y-E-O-M-A-N. It's Whitman Publishing. It's been the standard for years. I think it first came out in the late 1946, something like that. It's standard. The prices you see in it are basically retail prices, which is what a dealer would charge you. So you have to knock some money off that. There's a blue version of it as well, which is more the wholesale price that a dealer would pay. It's got all the information. They've been updating it over the years. They've included wonderful historical background on all the on all the material. So, and it comes out every year. Every library should have it.
All right, Lorenzo, thanks a lot. Quickly over to Matt in East Greenbush. Matt, you're on.
Hey, Matt.
Hi. Matt. Thanks for taking my call. I have three World War II ration stamps books, one of which has three stamps left in it. They were all left to me by my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
They were my great grandma or great grandfathers, my grandmothers, and my aunts.
Mm.
And I was just wondering, I want to keep a hold of them for sentimental reasons.
Yeah,
but I was wondering if they are actually worth anything.
At present, no. But this is something that you should hold on to because World War II memorabilia is actually just—it's constantly getting better, and these things are. They became obsolete, so there was no point in really saving them. So they are becoming scarcer as time goes on. At the moment, you're only looking at a few dollars or so, but it will continue to increase in value. It is actually something that's well worth holding on to.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Thank you, because that was the most optimistic answer you've given on this program in years. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for being here.
Just bring me back next time.
Once again, your email address?
It's coinandstampguys, one word, at BERK.com.
All right. Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Portraits and Landscapes, celebrating the people, places, and history of the Mohawk Valley, including works by Winslow Homer and Gilbert Stuart, arkellmuseum.org. Mother Earth Storehouse, serving the Hudson Valley since 1978, offering a variety of seasonal items, including gluten-free, vegan, and allergen-free desserts, MotherEarthStorehouse.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday and wedding and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. And Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, featuring individual attention in a private environment with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette using Natulique organic products, studiokTM.com. Once again, thanks to David Tripp and Bob Scott for joining us this afternoon. Thank you for listening. Terrific calls, as always. Zach Malloy has been our engineer. Phones answered by Kayleen White. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, physical therapist Matthew Goodemote returns to answer your questions about all your aches and your pains. Oh, okay. Store them up for tomorrow at 2. Stand by for the book show.